A graphic novel, a TV show. Well, it's not TV, it's HBO. And will this thing succeed? And by how much, man? And some might cheer and some might scoff, because it's Damon Lindelof. But either way, we're off to watch some Watchmen. Watching Watchmen, talking Watchmen, analyzing Watchmen, and maybe arguing over Watchmen.
Welcome to Watchmen Watch. Who watches Watchmen? We watch Watchmen, and you watch Watchmen, and you already watched Watchmen. Now we're going to go ahead and talk about a lot of other Watchmen things. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we have another special guest for this bonus episode. Very Woo-hoo. Excited to have him here. He is a staff writer for IO9, Charles Pulliam-Moore. Thanks so much for being here.
Hello, hello. I'm here. I'm ready to talk with you guys. I'm ready to mix it up.
Yeah. Ooh, let's mix it up.
I'm excited to have you on. I've been really enjoying the recaps that you've been doing for IO9, for Watchmen. You do a lot of great writing for them overall. I may quibble a little bit with you liking Titans as much as you do, but...
Here's the thing. I don't like Titans. Here's the thing. Titans has like kind of fallen off the wagon, and I'm like not really into it at this point. Now it's just more of an obligation, and it's like, oh, Titans, you're out here like struggling down the block, and I've committed myself to getting you to the end.
You're helping Titans out. You're the Titans caretaker.
It's rough.
Torchbearer.
Yeah, Titans End, if you will. Is that a sports thing? Did I say that right? No?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I don't think so.
Well, let's. There's two things I want to talk about. We're recording this on a Monday. This episode, of course, goes up on a Thursday. But you, beyond the recap, you started weaving in an interview you did with Nicole Cassell, who was the director of the first two episodes. She's also an executive producer on Watchmen. And the title of the article was Watchmen Isn't Being Written by White People, Thank Goodness, which is something that you delved into pretty hard with her. Why was this an important thing to hit with her? Why was this an important take? And what did you take away from the interview based on this?
I mean, like, Alex, I feel like that's, it's a rhetorical question. Watchmen is a Watchmen is a black show. Black show meaning that like it centers characters and the fact that they're black in such a central kind of way that to not focus on that would be to misunderstand and not really kind of like grasp what the show was actually trying to get at. This is like everyone how to put it, I feel as if there are a lot of people who saw the first episode and thought to themselves like, oh, they're doing like a race thing and like it's very intense. But as it's gotten more as it's like developed, it has gotten more intense in the sense that it's not necessarily just like the surface level brutality that people have to deal with, but rather the fact that there's a system in which that kind of brutality can exist. And that's what like Watchmen is kind of trying to get into, in, as much as, you know, a comic book show can. And the fact that it's weird because like when you watch so much television, you kind of get into the habit of being like, oh, like you're not doing this enough. But for a comic book show, the fact that it's leaning so heavily into this reality of American society is wild. And so me, as like a black viewer, my concern just like coming into it was like, all right, cool. Like you want to talk about like police brutality and like racism? Great. Have you talked to any black people? And thankfully, because obviously like the cops are being framed as like the heroes here. And like, yeah, we all love a nun who beats people up. Like that's fun. Like that's fun.
Yeah. It's cool. So often encountered.
But at the same time, Angela Abar is dealing with a lot of, she's just dealing with the kinds of realities that are relatable to a lot of people in a sense that the police exist as an authoritarian presence in people's lives, right? And so the show presenting Angela and her cohort as like the heroes, like that in and of itself is this weird kind of like charged decision. And you, well, as I'm trying to like unpack it right here and like in my little description, it's getting more complicated because like the show itself is like so much.
Yeah. And it's funny, like, I feel like everybody came into this not knowing really that it was going to be so much about race, and that first scene and then the first episode, everyone was like, okay, oh, I see they're starting here. And then the second episode, it was like, oh, okay, they're still doing the race thing. And then by the fourth episode, where it doubles back on it a little bit and we really touch that opening sequence again, everyone was like, okay, this is actually what the show is fully about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting. We were talking about this a little bit in the recap for the last episode. Just structurally, you were mentioning, Charles, that Angela Abar is the hero, and she's framed as the hero, and that's definitely how it is for the first episode and a half to two episodes or so. Then you flip perspectives to Lori Blake, where she ostensibly becomes the hero. She becomes the protagonist of the show. And what I found so fascinating about the fourth episode, that frankly I think was... messy is too strong a word, because it's not a messy show. It's a very calculated show, but it's certainly the loosest of the four episodes in my mind. But it keeps them even, and it keeps switching back and forth in terms of your loyalties. It definitely muddies up how you feel, at least in my perspective, about Angela Abar as a protagonist, as she keeps going further and further down this hole, doing things that are very decidedly not heroic behavior in my mind. I don't know if you have the same perspective.
Oh no! That's very much the case. But I wanna tell on myself here. I don't know that Watchmen wants any of us, or rather, I don't know that Watchmen wants us to see any of its characters as fundamentally heroic. Right? Mm-hmm. I think that they're all fucked up in different and like profound ways, and the ways in which they're fucked up are all informed by different kinds of trauma. The reason that like she was killed by state by space junk is like such a great episode is because Lori kind of brings in that clear perspective where she's just like, oh no, right, your parents were murdered and now you kind of feel like some injustice and now you want to do some shit and now like I'm in a phone booth with like a huge dildo, like that's my life, like these are the life you live. But at the same time, the show is kind of trying to, in my mind, give us like the distinct sense that none of these people are quite, I'm trying to figure out like a diplomatic way of saying it. None of these people are well adjusted enough to deal with the traumas that they're kind of trying to work through. If that makes any kind of sense. They understand how to like grasp at it, but it's not something that they can really understand the full scale of, and they can't kind of deal with in that like minute way that would actually lead to any kind of substantive change for them. I also understand that that was not really a good answer to your question, but I lost like the thread of where I was going. Like,
no, I think that, I mean, it makes sense to me because we don't know all of their traumas either, because we're sort of coming in the middle and we get to see the forward motion of the story and the backwards motion sort of at the same time.
Yeah.
There was an interesting point that you brought up on Twitter just talking about the inherited trauma, because this is something that Damon Lindelof has talked about quite a bit. This was one of the main thrusts that he wanted to get forward with the show, that people feel the things that are left over from their grandparents. I don't think this made it into your recap, but you tweeted quite a bit about the ancestry that shows up in this latest episode, and how that, at least in part, reflected on your own experience in your own life. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I think that it's not a particularly unique experience to be a Black person who only knows but so much about their family's history. The thing I was talking about online was mostly about how... And my mom spent, a few thousand dollars, and this was before the age of 23andMe, but, like, spent money, trying to figure out where we came from and who we were. And she found a fair amount of information. And I, as an adult, still don't really know what to make of it, right? Like, I don't know that anyone knows what to make of, you trace your family back a couple of generations and they were slaves, and they were slaves, and then they made a life outside of that. Like, that in and of itself is such a complex and, like, broad, beautiful story that really can't be conveyed just in, like, a, oh, right, and then they were free, and then they did the program. Like, that's not it. There's much more to it, and you understand that implicitly, and that's what makes Angela's moment in the community center so beautiful, where there is the tree that's coming up, and, like, it's beautiful and just, and it's gorgeous. But at the same time, the thing that, like, hits her is, like, knowing where her people came from. And for me personally, I was just party to it as I was a child. And so I didn't really have a full appreciation for just what all going out and looking for my family's history meant. For, you know, my family. But looking back on it now, it's like, oh, yeah. Like, you want to know. You need to know. Not necessarily because it defines who you are, because you want to know where you come from. You want to know where your people come from.
Yeah. It's one of the interesting things, I think, about Angela Abar is that her background, as we touch on even more in this past episode, is even more complicated than it seems at first. Even though she is presented in that very first scene as, hey, I grew up in Vietnam. She's making the mood cakes. Her bakery is called Milk in Hanoi. All of this stuff, you don't really get a sense of how steep she was in Vietnamese culture until, I think, this episode, really, and she engages with Lady Tru. There was, I don't want to repeat the entire article, but there's a really good article, I thought, by Han Nguyen on Salon that went up today, where she talked about, the title of the article, if you want to look it up, is In Watchmen, Just Like in Real Life, Feelings About Vietnam Remain Uncertain. And I saw this popping up a lot on Twitter, probably not at the same level as the Tulsa scene for the first episode,
but
very specifically when Angela in Vietnamese, and I'm not going to try to repeat it because I will mangle it, but says, fuck your mother in Vietnamese. Yeah. People are like, oh shit. Oh, that's what I say. That was one of the first things I learned. And Han even writes in the piece, she says, the first Vietnamese phrase that non-Vietnamese kids learned on the playground when I was growing up in Houston was fuck your mother in Vietnamese. And it's just kind of fascinating to see this show, to Justin, to your point, working on race, working on culture, all of these things in multiple ways, that it's not as concrete as black and white or anything like that. It's a lot of things at the same time.
That, like, that really speaks to the ways in which the show, I think, after episode 4, is not necessarily, it's not a show about, no, I don't want to say that. I'm trying to get together.
Well, you've seen more. You've seen through episode 6, right? So you.
I have, but the things that I'm trying to say are less about spoiling and more about the things that I think that people should be getting out of this show. Watchmen is a black show, right? It is a show of black, like, about black people and about the ways in which, like, America has failed and brutalized black people. That's just, like, that's just a fact. Like, that is so, right? But at the same time, Watchmen is also a show about what legacy means for different people. And I think that in a character like Lady Tru, this crime's happening. in a character like Lady Tru provides that, like, choice chance for the perspective to be, like, a little bit blown out. I had a point and I've lost it.
All right, well, I can pick up on that. Look, I think like Watchmen the comic was never like, oh, it's about this specifically, because they would always change gears in different issues and bring in other sort of sides of issues or different like takes, and you'd be like, oh, it's not about that. And that shifting between different perspectives and issues and takes makes you think harder and makes you think about the issues that you thought it was and about the new issues, because it doesn't match the like expected narrative that you already had in your head.
Right, that's why
this great show is doing the same thing.
Yeah. Let's shift gears a little bit. A couple of things we need to get to in the world of Watchmen. One thing that I wanted to mention up front, we made a big mistake right at the top of the last episode of the podcast, totally on me. But I believe I opened up the podcast. We were talking about the title of the show, and I said, well, of course, nobody's reading the book Things Fall Apart at any point in the episode. And immediately somebody sent us a tweet being like, there's literally a scene where Angela Abar goes to Cal and says, what are you reading? And he says, Things Fall Apart. So
here's the thing. I have a question for you. Did everybody read Things Fall Apart? Because I don't know, for whatever reason, like when we read it, it felt like they're like, hey, listen, don't tell your teachers we did this right now. Okonkwo, he dies at the end. And it's like, okay, cool, great. Cool.
Yeah.
I guess it was out there.
Yeah, I guess it was out there. I got to be honest, I have not read it. We just talked about it. I'm sorry, Charles. I'm sorry.
What are you doing?
I don't know. I watch a lot of TV.
And milquetoast the story as it is. It's a good one. It is.
Well, tell me this. Since you have read it, and we were speculating about it a little bit and kind of talking around it, what did you take away from the title of the last episode? What did you take away from the fact that Cal is reading Things Fall Apart? Because we've had a lot of suspicions about what is going on with Cal on this show.
So I have been watching this show very much not trying to do the whole like, ooh, what's the secret? Like, what are you building at? that's a very emotionally exhaustive kind of way to watch TV. But I get it. But
welcome to our podcast.
Yeah.
Something that
welcome to Damon Lindelof's.
Truly. Just like, ooh, but what's the point?
But
something that has recently really kind of grabbed me is this wild idea that Cal is Dr. Manhattan's agent on Earth. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what the fuck? But, like, rather, what the fuck was my initial reaction? But then as my friends who are watching the show just sort of like came at me with their shitty theories, which as an aggregate made a lot more sense. I was like, oh, but I don't want that to be the, I really don't want that to be the case.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to your point, it's very hard to speculate about the show. I think I was listening back to the last episode and we kept running into a wall with all of our theories because they haven't given you enough facts at this point to actually put anything together in any sort of reasonable way.
Everything is conjecture right now. Everything is theory. And the thing that I love about Watchmen is that as theory driven as it is, it doesn't shy away from like shitting on fans. Mm-hmm. The fact that Laurie Blake has such an open and oblique disdain for people who love her, that to me is like, that's what I want from superheroes. I want superheroes to like, get the fuck away from me. Why you like this? Ew, stop, stop, gross. Like that's hot. And
I guess the real frontier in comic book superhero TV is like hating fans, like reverse fan service.
But like, yes.
Yeah, no, I mean it seriously. It is.
Especially in this industry where everyone's just like, ooh, if the fans don't love you, you're going to be a failure. A superhero being like, bitch, like, I don't give a fuck about the fans. The fans will be such a dick. It's great.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's move on and talk about PDpedia. Now, this is the thing that they've been putting up right after the show every week. This is some supplementary material. We were speculating a little bit that this stuff is written by Damon Lindelof. I'm going to throw it out there, and I don't know, Charles, if you have any more information. I think it's written by Jeff Jensen, who is Damon Lindelof's writing partner on this.
I don't know who writes it. I don't know. Oh my God, that's so strange. I feel like it just like falls out of the sky, fully formed. What are you talking about?
It's evidence, Alex. It's evidence.
Right. Yeah. It's actually Asian Petey writes it, I think. Exactly. But there were
because Asian Petey is a person who exists in our world.
Exactly. There are two pieces. What was that, Justin?
I'm trying to cancel Petey.
Oh, hey, Pete, are you trying to cancel Petey? Pete?
Nope.
Okay. Thanks for chiming in. We got two pieces of evidence this week, which are definitely going to be Pete's favorite thing because he has been loving this dildo storyline. So the first one.
Yes. I want to ask you all an honest question. You would buy that shit, right? What? Just to have as like an art piece, like in your house.
So
imagine it though, like
the balls, the full on suitcase where you open it and it has to glow, and it's like, hey, guess what I got? I got the deluxe model.
So I don't want to. To honestly answer your question, I don't want to sell him out. I don't know if he wants his name posted on the podcast. There is a guy who has been listening to the podcast, and I've been chatting with him a bit back and forth on our Twitter account on Watch from Watch One. He is a 3D printer. He made this very cool 3D Watchman clock that was very nice, and he showed it to me, and we were chatting about how awesome that was. And then he was like, hey, do you want... whatever it is, I love a good challenge. Is there something you want me to 3D print? And without hesitation, I was like, I didn't get back, but the first thing I was like, he should make me the dildo. That's the thing that he should make. He should make the dildo. And I was like, I don't know this guy personally. I can't be
make the request. An
enormous blue dildo. And eventually we decided he is going to make a clock. And then he hit me back about 10 minutes later. He's like, you know what? Thanks for the schematics for the dildo. I'm going to make the dildo as well.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
There
he's like,
you
go. I made so the dildo answer... first. I made the dildo already. I never told anyone.
So answer your question, Charles. Yes.
All of the ridiculous posts about the dildo are a reflection of the fact that like, there are just like too many straight people writing about shit in general. Like, all right, you guys, the dildo size in and of itself is not what's special. The fact that it's a fucking Koons piece, that's what's interesting about it. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah. Well, and it's also like in the reality of it in the world is that this is the biggest celebrity in the world. And there's just who's the biggest celebrity in our world? If there was just like, hey,
I'm never going to be anyone who like, there's never going to be anyone who like knocks John out of Lori's mind in that capacity. Never. It's like it's always going to be him. And the way that Lori is presented in the show, it makes you feel like it's almost like a joke for her, right? Where it's like, hey, right, like I fucked God. Ha 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 ha. What does that look like in a sense where you're just like trying to get off though? Right? It's ridiculous. There's a kind of I can't even really verbalize like my thoughts around it.
Well, and she's left with the sort of the facsimile or the nearest vision of God that she has, and it's this dildo, and I love it as just a metaphor for like relationships or just like trying to being a human where you're like, this is as close as I'm ever going to get to what I want.
The thing that I love about it, though, is that I feel as if we are meant to understand that there's nothing about that dildo that says anything about Dr. Manhattan, right? It's all about the way that she has projected what her time and her relationship with him meant. And so, you know, it's outsized and ridiculous, and we can all have our laughs about it. But she's a human the way that the rest of us are. And we sort of have to, or rather should, just sort of like make our peace with the fact that, like, yeah, she fucked up. And this is just how she deals with it now. She.
Yeah. I like the puppet show for our audio podcast. That's going to work well. Now, there's a couple of interesting wrinkles, though, with the PDPedia stuff, where beyond the schematics of the Dr. Manhattan dildo, of note there, the batteries are in the scrotum, in case you were wondering. There's an interview with Lori from 1995, And we find out a couple of things there. First of all, with the whole alternate reality of it, she and Dan Dreiberg, aka Night Owl 2, were both captured after one last caper together. They had already broke up. They weren't talking to each other for a pretty long period of time, but they got back together to stop. And this was crazy. I could not believe this when I got to this. Timothy McVeigh. And they stopped Timothy McVeigh from doing the Oklahoma City bombing, and that's where they ended up getting captured. Which,
interesting.
Yeah, in my mind, actually makes a lot of sense for the world of Watchmen, where we do – initially, I was very thrown by the idea of this, but then I thought, okay, like how Dr. Manhattan, quote, you know, stops wins Vietnam for the United States, this is the same sort of thing where we have this tragedy ultimately doesn't happen because of these people, but in certain ways potentially becomes worse off of that. And the dildo note there is, as they're interviewing her, as the FBI is interviewing her, they reveal – she reveals they were wondering what's in her silver case, and she says, oh, you know what it is? It's a big fucking glowing blue dildo that'll give you cancer. And they're like, no, it's not. And she's like, she explains, Dan actually built the dildo as a final fuck you to her, being like, you're totally focused on Dr. Manhattan. I'm going to build this for you. You're thinking about him too much. And that's why it's so outsized at the same time, because of what he thinks is the amount of space it takes in her brain.
Wow.
So
what a great engineer prank.
Yeah. And ultimately, we kind of got the sense of this, but the reason Dan Dreiberg is still in prison is he didn't talk at all. He didn't say anything about Timothy McVeigh. He didn't say anything about 11-2 or anything like that. Meanwhile, Laurie, and the interview cuts off at this point, says...
gave everything up.
Yeah, she says, tell your bosses I know about what happened at 11-2, which is when the squid dropped on New York, and ultimately joins the FBI off of that. But given that new information... and again, I know this is Pete's favorite subject, but Justin, Charles, and Pete will continue to stay silent, I assume. What do you take away from this new piece of information about Dan, about Lori, et cetera?
Well, it definitely explains a lot of, like, why she had the pet owl and they talked to her like, oh, you know, you could get somebody out of jail. And she was very cold about it. That kind of makes a lot more sense of, like, things have happened that we really haven't witnessed, and we're kind of putting pieces together a little bit.
Yeah. Justin, Charles.
I mean, I thought this was so great. The fact that they go right at like these, the heart of these issues, like the bombing, calling it 11-2, as their version of 9/11. And Laurie is such like a straight up asshole through this whole interview that I just thought it was such a great little piece of knowledge about her character. It was so good.
All right, let's move on and talk about the promo for episode 5, Little Fear of Lightning. Now, Charles, you've watched ahead, so feel free to stay mum.
Play it cool, Charles.
I can't really, to be perfect, if I'm being entirely honest with you, I don't remember episode 5 at all.
I really don't.
I have episode 6 in mind. And the way that episode 6 makes everything about the series from its jump make sense. Not in like a narrative like, oh, like you fit the pieces of the puzzle together. There's a way in which, like, by episode 6 in particular, the way that the show is like front loaded with like very like aggressive trauma suddenly stops being just like a gross overreach on the show's part, and it becomes like an actually interesting part of the narrative that's being told here. And that's like,
and that's exciting.
Like it's a kind of multidimensional storytelling that I'm not really accustomed to like seeing. It's the kind of thing where like you learn about it in school and people are like, oh, sometimes people do interesting things this way, and you never you never assume that you're actually going to see them. And to actually see it in practice, you're like, oh shit, you're like doing the thing. And not only are you doing the thing, you're doing it in a very like riveting kind of way.
Ooh.
Yeah, Yeah.
And that's episode six.
That's episode six. Episode six will, like, fuck you up real good.
Oh, shit.
It's an art. I will say this. It's an art house episode. I imagine that it's the kind of episode of Watchmen that, like, Zack Snyder would have watched while he was, like, getting his, like, shit together for Watchmen and was like, I'm gonna do this and do it better. Yeah. But he didn't do better.
Right.
This is very much like a deconstruction, not only of, like, Snyder's work, but also, like, of the comic book itself, and an exploration of, like, what the show is trying to get into. The reason I kind of hate talking about Watchmen, it's because, like, I always feel like I'm saying too much and, like, trying to hype it up too much, but it's doing that much and then some in every episode in a way that I don't know that a lot of other shows are really trying to do right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that gets us... go ahead, Justin.
I was going to say, you're in no danger of hyping up episode five, though.
Well, let's, Justin and Pete, let's turn to you then and talk about some speculation based on the promo. What did you take out of that? What images did you grab? What interested you about episode five?
First off, I got to say, they really took a left turn. I thought after episode four, episode five promo was going to obviously have Lube Man in there, but we did not see any Lube Man. And so I was really, that should have been the whole promo, what he's
Lube
doing.
Lube Man appears once, and that's his only function. He's just there to be like, hey, guess what? This world is weird as shit. And that's it. And y'all all have to deal with it. Now, now that I've got my thoughts a little bit more together, episode five is, it's Looking Glass's episode, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yo. Like, it's one of the most, like, just aesthetically beautiful, but also, like, narratively, fuck, you get how much... I'm trying to like put all this like into like a proper sentence. I was having a conversation earlier this week about how the thing that makes me love this show the most, particularly as it pertains to Ozymandias, I don't really care for Jeremy Irons. No, it's whatever. He's an old man. an old man did some old English things in front of English people. Okay. Great, fine.
But, pretty acclaimed actor.
Yeah, sure. You must love The Crown.
I mean, hey, listen. The monarchy's kind of fucked up. But the thing about Jeremy Irons... Oh, no, that's not what I want to talk about. Jeremy Irons just, like, doesn't really do it for... Fuck, I've lost the entirety of my thread. Fuck.
You're talking about Looking Glass.
You veered... Oh. Just like the show itself, you went from whatever the main narrative was to focusing on Jeremy Irons for a little bit.
Very much so. He does draw the light. The way that the show gave Looking Glass, like, this grounded, fully thought out kind of, like, deep trauma that gives you an understanding of why he, not just why he's afraid of the squids, the way that most people are in the country would be, understandably, but the way that, like, he wraps himself in mirrors. Like, that's brilliant. That's such good storytelling, I think. Yeah. I'm assuming
It does seem like from this promo that it's about, it's Looking Glass's episode, and it's sort of boosting up the 7th Cavalry plot, which has been sort of off to the side for a little bit.
It lets you know what it is that drives him to be the kind of cop that he is. And I think that in a show like Watchmen, oftentimes at this point in the series, you're like, oh, you've got, like, the black hero cop that you should be rooting for, and then she has her weird white friend. And the assumption is that you should be rooting for them both, but I think that audiences understandably, like, no, why? Like, no. And this show, it's not that it disabuses you of being able to see him as, like, a potentially problematic person, but it makes his relationship to what's going on in Tulsa, like, that much more intense. It's not just that he's from Tulsa.
he was there. He was like, there when it happened. Gets in, like, and the way that the show gets like into it is so brilliant, and brilliant in a way that is made more intense by the fact that Zack Snyder just didn't want to talk about it at all.
Well, let's, before we run out of time here, I do want to get to some Twitter questions and other questions that folks sent us. They do get into some wild speculation here. But to Pete's point, this is actually from Bandito on our Patreon Slack. Really, the only question is, who is Lube Man? Petey is pretty skinny. That was the popular theory that I saw online after the episode, that it was Agent Petey. We talked about that a little bit, but that seems...
All on his back is so fucked up. I'm like, bro, like, leave your face. Like,
yeah, lube would not... The lube wouldn't have helped him out there.
No.
He has a scraped up back.
Yeah. do you have any further theories about Lube Man, Justin, Pete?
I mean... I tend to think that it, like Charles is saying, I think we saw Lube Man, we never see Lube Man again until we buy the action figure, which comes out Christmas time.
What I would love is if he comes back one more time. It's the last shot of the episode when everybody is like, well, we sure did a Watchmen, and they walk off screen, and then Lube Man just slides along the bottom of the screen.
That would be amazing. Great. I would love that.
Yeah. This is from Tech1389 on Twitter. We assume Adrian is on Earth, but is he? We assume Dr. Manhattan is on Mars, but is he? The things we think we know probably aren't even close to the truth. I think we talked about this other day on the podcast. I don't think we think Adrian is on Earth at this point, right?
No. I think he's fully on Mars. I agree. I think that Dr. Manhattan is on Earth.
I also agree, because I've launched a lot of things, you know, in catapults, and at no point did they just disappear when they hit a certain area. So he's definitely not on Earth.
Can you imagine, though, if like Dr. Manhattan was just like chilling out on Mars? Like, why are you throwing this bullshit up here? I'm trying to do more.
Yeah, that's great. He's just judging him. Like, dude, you're weird. What's with you, dude?
This is from Aquamarine YG on Twitter. A bunch of questions here. Is Vite on Mars? What crashed at the farmhouse? Where was Will before he returned? Who is the Silver Guy? We covered Silver Guy a little bit. That's Lube Man. And we talked just now about, is Vite on Mars? Let's talk about what crashed at the farmhouse, because this is an interesting thing, I thought. Certainly my assumption, the way that it was cut together, and I found a bunch of recappers thought this as well online, is that you have that shot going from the scene at the Clark farm with Lady True, where it fades into Tulsa. So my assumption was, thing falls from the sky, she builds over that. That's what we're seeing now. This happened in the past. But after a bunch of back and forth, Alan Sepinwall, very trustworthy journalist on Twitter, said, I am told by a very reliable source that the scene on the farm takes place on the same night as Judd's funeral.
Yeah,
kind of blew me away a little bit. What was your take on it, Charles?
I've always assumed that everything that we see that isn't being conveyed, like, via story, is happening in real time. Mm-hmm. Like, Lady True saw some shit fall from the sky. She's like, yes, bet, mine, right now. Come on, come on now. Come on, yeah, I bought your house. Now run, run, get the thing. I don't think it's Manhattan. I don't think it has anything to do with him. I think it is space. I think it is space junk. Mm-hmm. I think it is the kind of space junk that has the potential to create like a tectonic cultural shift in the world. But it's not necessarily something. I don't think that it's something that like Lady True understands like on its face. And I don't think that it has anything to do with Dr. Manhattan. I do think that it's like a pure coincidence, and it's just something that she can capitalize on, because that's what we've seen her, like, that's what her power is, right? Like, she was at the right place at the right time when Ozymandias, you know, was exposed for being a fraud, and like Vate Industries had to be like sold, and she was there for it. And like, that's the kind of thing that she brings to the table. Whether or not she's able to actually leverage, you know, whatever she found into any kind of like discernible business interest, like, I I would hope so. But if it did not turn out to be that way, I'd be fine with it.
Well, and I think the idea that it's Veidt or Dr. Manhattan feels wrong to me, because why would she need to buy the farm when those people could just get out of the ship or whatever and just go do their thing? So it has to me, it has to be an object that she wanted to own because it fell to Earth on her now purchased land. So, yeah,
do you think it might just like be him?
Like his body?
Yeah, just like him, just being like, I can't.
I think Dr. Manhattan figured out if he makes himself certain tall enough, you know, he can jerk off and then shoot Earth from Mars. So that's what it is.
Jesus, Pete. Wow. I don't know why you're uncomfortable with a big blue dildo and talking about that at all, but you're like, yeah, Dr. Manhattan is coming so hard it's flying from Mars to Earth.
But I mean, he would be.
Yes.
I mean, it's like beating it off. Like the Earth would constantly be like besieged by just like cosmic loads that were like tearing holes through continents. It would be terrible.
I've explained it to my kids this way. That's where rain comes from. Too much? Too much? A little too much, I think.
I like that this is. I didn't know that you had kids, but I'm glad that this is how I've learned.
That's how he explains it. That's how he told his parents.
Yes. Two other quick tweets. One is from @Rockdale_Tiger on Twitter. Pretty sure Veidt is trapped on that island from Lost. He's just got to turn the wheel. Funny joke, though I did see people pointing out that the second to last episode of Lost, which told the story of the Man in Black and Jacob on the island, we are seeing some shades of that. Other people pointed out that the fourth episode of Lost is the one that revealed that Locke was originally in a wheelchair. We almost get a reverse of that in this fourth episode of Watchmen, where Will gets out of a wheelchair. But
Alex, can you just never say Jacob from Lost?
We don't have to talk about it. Like,
yeah, that's it. We don't have. If they say, if there's a line in the episode where it's like, oh, it's sort of like you're like Jacob from Lost, I still don't.
All right, I'll just never bring it up again. This is the last one from Tracy Todd on Twitter. I think Lady True actually uncovered the entire scheme that Adrian Veidt concocted in the 80s, blackmailed him into exile on Mars, and now wants to create her own version of Manhattan's clock castle from the book to lure Dr. Manhattan back to Earth and kill him.
Wow.
That's a lot of stuff in one tweet. I don't mind parts of this, but I feel like
she would have had to have been a child.
Yeah.
Like a full child. Like, and hey, we all love villainous children, but
Alex made a couple of them.
I did. It's true.
That's not the kind of story Watchmen is.
Yeah, it also feels like whatever the plan is, just building it all around Dr. Manhattan or killing Dr. Manhattan or luring him or anything like that feels too small to me.
Yeah.
For wherever they're going.
I deeply, deeply hope that I'm literally working on a thing right now about Dr. Manhattan's penis as a cultural object because I think that the discourse that exists around it is more interesting than the dick itself.
Most dicks.
Hey.
Discussion. Oh. It's all about the hype.
I'm using Manhattan's dick as he's just a reflection of who he is as a person. I don't care. Like, you don't feel any kind of connection to humanity. Then go away. You don't really have anything. There's nothing that you could potentially say that would make you as a character interesting to me or have anything substantive to say. That's sort of where, like, I'm at in my relationship to Watchmen. And I think that the way that the show has really sort of illustrated how other characters do have so much more to say. Even Ozymandias and his, like, weird, boring, just like, oh, Mr. Jeffries, I want to see you do theater. Whatever. It's dumb, but he has something to say. Lori is obviously the best example, where she's like, I was so much more of a complex person who had so much more depth before. And now here it all is, like, laid out. I don't know what that looks like for John. I don't really know what more he has to offer. Oh, you can see the future and do math real good. Cool. Great. Okay.
Yeah, we've touched on this a little bit on the podcast where we talked about him. And again, Damon Lindelof has talked a little bit about how he felt like the second you bring in Dr. Manhattan, just the show changes. And I appreciate that. The only way I could see you bring in Dr. Manhattan again when we would talk about speculation is if Dr. Manhattan is somebody else. The way that Cal lays it out, I believe, in the second episode where he says, no, Dr. Manhattan can't be other people. That's not part of his powers. Seems
Are you one of those people who believes that Cal might low-key be Dr. Manhattan?
I spend a lot of time thinking everybody on the show might be Dr. Manhattan. My major thought right now is I think Topher might be Dr. Manhattan, but I don't
Y'all
have...
Y'all have been on Reddit too much. He's spending too much time on Reddit. Dr. Manhattan is... on Mars, being like, why are you humans like this? Why are you doing this? Why?
No, Dr. Manhattan's on Reddit. That's what he
All right.
He's trying to learn how to be a human.
Before we wrap up here, Charles, plug some of your stuff. Where should people check you out?
People should look for me on the only social media that I want them to find me on, Charles Pulliam on Twitter. That's where I'm at. Yeah.
Cool.
Mysterious.
And every day on IO9, pieces go up.
It's true. You can find my blogs. You can find my musings. You can be caught up on all of the difficult feelings that I'm having about things that people should just consider as entertainment. And yet here I am having deep, deep thoughts.
Thank you so much for coming on. A couple of things before we do wrap up here. If you'd like to support the show, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by and we will chat with you about Watchmen. Also, we will be back with the regular recap episode of the show Sunday night right afterwards. You can check that out on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. Also, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. You can check us out on Twitter, WatchmenWatch1, Instagram, and Facebook at WatchmenWatchPodcast. And remember, we taped this podcast 35 minutes ago.
And every comet is a god blowing his load.
Oh, come on, man.